Fred Film Radio, Galway Film Flaw, Ireland.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 29th Galway Film Flaw, and I'm very pleased to be joined by director James Creedon, who presented his film, Thanks to Your Noble Shadow, here at the festival. And actually, I just saw the film and it was amazing, and I'm delighted to have you here.
Thanks, Matt. Good to talk to you.
So, the first question is kind of the obligatory question. Would you be able to tell our listeners a little bit about the movie before we get to discussing it in detail?
Sure. So it's a biographical documentary feature film, and it's a 100-year-old nun telling her life story, and she has come back to Ireland after 75 years in Japan. She left in 1935. And she came back in 2010 at the age of 98. And I'm a distant cousin of hers. She was a cousin of my great-grandfather. My grandmother had a close connection with her. They were actually good friends. And when Sister Pascal, or Jenny as she was known to her family, would come back to Ireland from the 60s onwards, sometimes she would stay with my grandmother. And so they developed a very close friendship. And very similar women, in fact. A lot of the same values and the same energy, the same decency and integrity. And I'm very close to my grandmother, who is still with us. So when Jenny came back to Ireland, it occurred to me that her life story should really be recorded. She was the last Irish missionary nun in Japan. There had been many down through the years. She was also highly lucid and a very good interviewee. I could tell that because she was just very engaging despite her advanced years. And so it took me about a year to pluck up the courage, maybe, and the and to sort of draw together the resources to start filming her. And it happened just after her 100th birthday, because that reminded me that she wasn't going to be around forever and that I'd better get moving fast if I was going to do it. And so I started doing it in a very amateur way, just family, kind of just taking my own footage with a camera that was, I don't even think it was HD, the first camera I used, and it was almost just for fun. And that footage ended up making it into the film at the start of the film, simply because what she was saying was so natural and compelling and funny that I thought this is a great kind of prelude to the film as it actually starts, and before it starts in a kind of more professional manner in terms of the production value.
Right. So the documentary actually evolved while you were making it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, which I think is one of the most interesting things about documentary in some respects, especially if you're doing it over a longer period of time. The story evolves as you're telling the story. You don't know when you start what the story will be. I didn't know that at the time because it was the first time I'd ever attempted to do something like this. I'm a TV news journalist, so I have basic editing skills and I've done news reports, etc., but usually no longer than a couple of minutes. So I wasn't used to the form, essentially, of doing a feature documentary. And so I thought I would be behind the camera. I thought it would be done in a couple of days of a couple of afternoons of interviewing. I expected to do something that would be closer to, I suppose, a TV news report, maybe 20-minute thing. And that would have been she would have been a very good subject for something like that too. But because I was sort of experimenting and trying to find out the right way to do it, I was a bit indulgent, and I would talk to her for longer, and then I would go back and do some more, and then I would bring a cameraman to try to get better quality images. And this went on over a period of a number of months, where I realized, oh, that footage probably wasn't good enough, or the sound wasn't good, so I'm going to go back and do another week. And in the end, everything made it in, which wasn't originally the plan. I thought, oh, I'll just use the best footage. But I realized, hold on a minute, this is now, the story is evolving as I'm filming her. As the months go by, she's getting older, she's getting weaker, I'm getting closer to the subject matter. And so I was losing all journalistic impartiality in the process. And also because she was partly deaf, I ended up being in the frame, so it took on a totally different character and a much more personal flavour. And then it turned into something more poetic, I suppose.
Well, was it a case when, while you kept going back and asking her questions, you realised that there were always more reasons to go on and continue making the film and change them?
I think that's true too. First of all, she had so many stories. She was 100 years old. She'd lived through the Irish War of Independence. She'd heard the shots that killed Michael Collins. She had, you know, the 6-week boat journey out to Japan. She'd said goodbye to everybody she knew and loved in Ireland for the rest of her life, as she thought. And you know, the war in Japan, 4 different camps. There were so many stories, so I think I realized, look, I really need to collect as much as possible and then select later. And because I was doing it independently and I didn't have any financing, and I wasn't even looking for financing. I was able to do it my way and be, I suppose, a little bit indulgent, which made the process much longer, made the editing process much more complicated, much richer too, and much more fun in some respects.
So how long did you shoot this documentary?
The very first footage was shot in September 2012. The last footage was shot in November 2013. So it was more or less a year.
So you kept that footage for a while, and you still didn't know what you wanted to make.
Spoiler alert, she dies. I mean, she was an old nun. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but like, I mean, I think it's kind of obvious as you're watching the film that this is kind of where it's going, and I don't think it gets in the way of a...
It's not... I've seen the film. I didn't think it was... It's definitely not the central aspect of the film. Although facing mortality is something that is fascinating about the film, it's not necessarily...
But because she died after I finished recording, I was left with all this footage, and I was left with the sense of responsibility that she had kind of entrusted with me her memories, even though I had kind of been the one who had made that happen. It's not like she was asking me to keep her memories, but she had shared them with me, and I knew that I had become kind of a repository or receptacle or whatever, or the hard drives had in any case, for all of these memories. And so that really was the what obliged me, or what made me feel I absolutely had to finish it somehow, and find the funds to do it, find the editor to do it, find the way to illustrate the stories, which I did mostly through archive footage and her own personal photos going way back to the 40s and 50s.
And speaking of which, yeah, the archive footage was particularly fascinating, and I'm always fascinated about film archive in general. Mm-hmm. So how did you research that? I mean, how did you find all this stuff?
I think basically what we did is first of all, I interviewed other people as well, not just Jenny, but I mean people who didn't make it into the film, like other missionaries and stuff like that. I wasn't sure where I would draw the contours of the story, so I was being very bad in terms of scripting it as I was filming it. And then I had a wonderful editor who is a friend in Paris where I live, and she's got more experience than I do in documentary filmmaking. She's about 10 years older than I am. She had a production company, but she was... had gone through a transition in her own life, and I don't think she'd mind me saying that, where she was particularly available, and we worked for 10 months together in my apartment. So she would come over every day, and we would work for a half a day, because I work evenings in TV news, and so late morning or early afternoon we would work together, and we'd work weekends together, and it was just a really personal, it took on a very personal flavor, even the work process with her. I mean, she became a very good friend during that time, and she still is, and so she really helped me to shape the story through the editing process. So we took all the footage, we went through absolutely everything, and we filtered it down to, you know, just the bare bone, like her story essentially, and everything else hit the cutting room floor. And so then we put it all, and we tried to sequence it. First of all, I was going to try to do something where I would do her life. So it's her life story essentially, and I was going to do it in chronologically her life story. No matter if I had interviewed her towards the end of the year or towards the beginning of the year. Then I realized I couldn't do that, because she did speak about her early life, but towards the end of the year, when she looks like she's on the point of death. And I couldn't use that at the start of the film, so I had to do it in the way, because it was the last year of her life, I did it chronologically. It was my journey interviewing her, in a way. And so we do, in the interviews, shoot back and forth. It's not... Sometimes she'll, like, even towards the end of the film, she's talking about the journey out again, even though she mentions it a few times. So so when we had decided how to sequence it, then it was a question of how do we now illustrate this. And I was very keen to exploit or to use as many of the archives as I could, showing the early Catholic Church. And I think the archives in themselves, showing the missionaries and stuff like that, and showing early Japan, some of those archives are saying things that I'm not saying as a narrator.
Yeah.
Because they like some of this old footage showing nuns almost like getting married to God and stuff like that, or speaking about journeying out to pagan lands, it jars so much with a contemporary mindset and contemporary ear. It's like, oh my God, what was this mindset, what was this thing? And I don't say that in the interviews with Jenny, but the selection of archives is a way of saying, wow, that was really another time, and that was really another mentality, and the Catholic Church was really kind of quite almost aggressively going into these countries and these cultures in a bid to establish a presence. And it did. There was a sense that they were, you know, bringing something maybe almost superior. Even just the concept of going to a pagan place has elements of we are bringing something greater. And I think what's interesting is in Japan, I think the Catholic Church encountered a culture that was more resistant than elsewhere to that. And I think her story then and her life in Japan meant that there was more of a kind of an equal encountering between Japanese culture and the Catholic Church than elsewhere, where the Catholic Church was maybe establishing itself in parallel to colonialism.
Yeah. Well, you still were interested in the religious aspect, but in the end, you were far more interested in Jen.
Right, because she just had this amazing personality. And I wonder if she had never had any Catholic education of any description, would she have been different? Would she have been the same person? I was myself kind of trying to figure out to what extent the values that she lived by in a very different culture in Japan, where she was educating, she was an English teacher, that's what she did for 75 years. Yeah. And, you know, most of her students were not Catholic. And so I wondered, okay, you know, she was trying to spread these Catholic values, but she had simplified them so much in this culture that wasn't necessarily hugely interested in Catholicism that they took on maybe a simpler, purer quality. It was less about the complexity of dogma and more about, hey, love thy neighbor, you know, or, you know, in giving you receive, or just being a good person, being joyful, being thoughtful, being present. And she just was such a kind of a Zen personality in some respects. And I don't mean Zen as in silent and kind of peaceful, because she was also kind of boisterous and very fun. Oh, yeah. But I think the joy that she carried in her heart and that I think touched everybody she met was kind of exceptional in a way that's difficult to explain. But when you see her and when you spend time with her from viewing the film, I think people understand that there was something extraordinary about her. She was like a rare diamond of a human being, like somebody who just really, really, really brought joy with her everywhere she went and affected people. And because she was so thoughtful and kind and had established, for example, relationships with past pupils that she maintained like 40, 50 years after they left her classroom. Like that kind of thoughtfulness is something that my grandmother has and that generation had, even though my grandmother is a generation below her. And I just thought, was there some influence of Catholicism on that, which is uncomfortable for me as somebody who's not a practicing Catholic to think about? This is what I was going through as I was making the film. And I realized, hey, maybe some of that stuff is still relevant, you know, and maybe in a personal way I can distill the things that are still relevant to me and maybe to others and bring it, thread it through the story. And I think what the film does, I hope it does anyway, is maybe make people think about the kind of person she was, and hey, she was a nun. That's kind of fun and bizarre, because nuns have been getting a lot of bad press lately, and for good reason. And hey, maybe they weren't all bad, and maybe some of them and the values they live by are, maybe some of those values are still relevant. Yeah. And will always be relevant, because they're just, you know, human values. Yeah.
Human values, yeah, at a time.
Universal.
Well, thanks very much, James. It was a great pleasure talking with you. But before we went a little over time, okay. But before I let you go, I know that this is your first feature, you were telling me. What was your experience working in your first feature? But most importantly, are you also thinking of making a second feature?
The experience of working in the first feature was extremely challenging at times. I hadn't broached the issue of funding or like the real production questions as I was filming, so I had to figure all that out after I'd finished filming. And it took me about 6 months to kind of get I was going to have to get an editor, and I was going to have to pay her, and I was going to have to raise money. And because I'm a TV journalist, I thought maybe I could do more of it on my own, and I realized actually no, you need a team to make a documentary film. So it was challenging, but oh my god, what a learning curve, and what an enriching process. It's totally transformed as a person, you know. And will I make another one? I hope so. I've had some ideas, but nothing as compelling as Jenny, so we'll see what happens.
It takes time to find the right ideas and the right inspiration. But is there any themes that interest you, like particularly? Do you feel like there is?
I just think I think biographical films are really interesting. I mean, this film was a biographical film, so remarkable people and maybe how they lived their lives, how they affected people, how they touched people. I really, they're the kind of films I enjoy, and there were some great films at the Galway Film Fla this year, like that, and they're the ones that most moved me. So maybe another film about some exceptional person that I have yet to meet.
And so once again, I'd like to remind our listeners that your film is Thanks to Your Noble Chef, and that this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.